The following Dharma talk was given by Danika Shoang Ankele Osho at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoang Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning. Good to see everyone here. Really glad for folks who are joining us from a distance. And thanks to those of you who braved the snowfall and the roads this morning. A small handful of folks from outside, so good to have you here too. Shugen Roshi is away nearby. He's at the Abbasi. Has been all this week and will be next week on a kind of extended period of abbot's duties, you might say. He's in retreat, but very much in retreat, working on teachings for the upcoming Ango and taking care of his own practice. So I'm offering the talk. Well, what else is there to talk about except the world? The world. There's the outer world that we think we know, and there's the inner world that's in many ways, you could say, the focus of our practice. Transforming our inner world in practice, how does this relate to the outer world? Seeing the activity in the outer world, how does this relate to the inner world? Responding to the outer world, how can we be in accord with the deep truth of the inner world? Worlds within worlds within worlds. Buddha Dharma speaks about the outer world, our kind of conventional world, in terms of samsara. The completely dysfunctional, ill-fated, endless cycle driven by greed, anger, and ignorance. Struggling, trying to be happy, trying to satisfy. We keep going amiss, whether we can see it or whether we are blind to it, there is an undercurrent of struggle and dis-ease that runs through our lives when we live in that ongoing, endless pattern. Thanissaro Bhikkhu says, samsara literally means wandering on. It's the answer not to the question, where are we, but to the question, what are we doing? Instead of a place, he says, it's a process. The tendency to keep creating worlds and then moving into them. As one world falls apart, you create another one and go there. At the same time, you bump into other people who create their own worlds too. The play and creativity in the process can sometimes be enjoyable. In fact, it would be perfectly innocuous if it didn't entail so much suffering. The worlds we create keep caving in and killing us. The work that we have been doing this weekend in the Further Steps Along the Path retreat, with just coming in closer to this study of mind and looking at that the aspects of meditation that entail stopping, calming the mind, settling the mind, and seeing, bringing wisdom, bringing insight, bringing understanding, illuminating the activity of our mind. Years ago, I heard Shugen Roshi refer to practice as a revolution that was bloodless. And that has stayed with me. And right now, it feels like a very pertinent understanding of what we're doing. Because we can study the self and illuminate the self and the world creation of the self and shine that light of wisdom to help us see in a deep way that gets beyond the politics and beyond the parties and beyond the individual actors what is going on. And from that deeper understanding, make some intelligent choices about how to respond. So if we take the definition that Thanissaro Bhikkhu provides for samsara, right, this tendency to continually create worlds and then move into them. First question is, okay, so what does he mean by a world, right? So a world, when we think in a conventional sense, like we're having an experience, it's taking place somewhere. We're in a situation, we're in a realm, we're in an environment. How is it that we could create that situation, that realm, that environment? Aren't we just in one? Isn't it just kind of de facto here and here we are? Well, we see, right? We see in practice, like, no, it appears that way. It appears that way. But as we start to look and examine, we start to see, like, whoa, I'm creating my experience. So there's the world of, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you do that thing I asked? That's a world. There's the world of, thank you so much. Thank you for coming and practicing so sincerely. It's been really an uplift. It's like a bright light. That's a world. And we're creating them constantly. We're moving through them, and they are colliding with each other. So our view of ourself and other at any moment, we can see, oh, that's a world. And some worlds we create, you know, one-on-one. We have a relationship. There's the world of that relationship. And there's the world that we create in groups, the world of Sangha, the monastery world. And there's the world that we create as nations, Democrats, Republicans. We made it up out of mind. And there is the world that we create as a whole world, superpowers, democracy, fascism, made of mind. And all of these worlds If we look, nowhere, nowhere will we find a single, lasting, permanent self. How are these worlds created? Ginger said, he's a 6th, 7th century Chan monk, if we look closely at samsara, we can see that it is nothing more than repeated acts of grasping. So the mind takes hold of something, stakes its claim, creates its territory, appropriates, awareness is lost. This mixes with our fantasies, our projections, the karma of a lifetime, with our feelings, our trauma, our basic confusion, our cravings, our longings, and then in this whole soup, there's this momentum where one moment leads to the next moment, leads to the next moment, grasping, grasping, greed, anger, and ignorance. It's the pig, the rooster, and the snake at the center of the wheel of samsara, greed, anger, and ignorance. This practice of shamatha is to slow down and settle the mind enough that we see for ourselves the truth of this. We see for ourselves, oh, this is a thought. It's not reality. That goes all the way down. We see the kleshas, our greed, how it manifests, our anger, how it manifests, the grasping of jealousy, the grasping of arrogance, pride, and then seeing this in ourself, we can look out and see it everywhere. It's the same. Tarthang Tolku, Buddhist teacher, says about samsara, as the telltale mark of our existence, the seemingly unending activity, meaning the spinning of the mind, the greed, anger, and ignorance, this cycle on overdrive, the seemingly unending activity extends out in all directions and in every expression of being. It captures not only the individual psyche, but the collective drama of the entire cosmos. Individuals, families, associations, nations, cultures, and civilizations are all sustained by the ever-present, inexhaustible spinning of mind itself. Spinning sentient minds collide and conjoin, orbiting in ever more and larger conglomerations. There seem to be no end to the actors and their role and roles their force can create. From the most helpless, pitiable human being to the most powerful and arrogant nation. The teaching is that this cycle, because of the workings of karma, because of the workings of cause and effect, it will just go on unless it is intentionally interrupted. The response of the Bodhisattva is an interrupting response. So, worlds within worlds, colliding and conjoining and conglomerating, forming, you know, the collective worlds of nations and parties and the tangled geopolitical mess. Our own little worlds, our relationships, our neuroses, our kleshas, our grasping, our endless dramas. What's the truth then? What's the alternative? Is there one? Or is it just like, wow, guess we're stuck here. The Buddha said, there is, monks, an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned. If, monks, there were not that unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, you could not know an escape here from the born, become, made, and conditioned. But because there is an unborn, unbecome, unmade, unconditioned, therefore you do know an escape from the born, become, made, and conditioned. In Zen, we call this Buddha nature. We call this the absolute light, luminous throughout the entire universe, unfathomable excellence pervading everywhere. Do not lose heart. Do not lose heart. This is a good time to really practice the way. One body. An ancient master said, just realize the unborn. That's you. Stopping. And seeing, that's what we're training to see. And we do see it. We glimpse it all the time. We glimpse it all the time. We just don't recognize it. Have you ever loved someone? Have you ever loved something? That feeling? What do you think that is? When we're divided, whether it's in division inside ourselves or outer division with each other, we can't feel the one body. So when we're practicing, we're really training in how to open up the causes and conditions so that more and more we can, and we trust it more and more. And the work that we do on the cushion is vital. Sometimes people will say, like, wow, you know, I don't know, shouldn't the monastery be more active or, you know, politically engaged? I'm like, we are leading the front line of this revolution, people. We need both. We need both. We need activists on the outer world front line, and we need activists on the inner world front line, 100%. And a mix. A mix is good. How do we practice closing the gap? So this is bodhisattva practice. This is bodhisattva practice, and let's not miss that the bodhisattva is the bodhisattva. The whole thing of a bodhisattva is that they're committed to saving everybody. That's the thing. That's what makes a bodhisattva a bodhisattva. If you're in it just for yourself, you're not a bodhisattva. Nobody gets left out. Nobody. Nothing is forsaken. So the Bodhisattva vow is to respond. It is to respond to the cries of the world. And the Bodhisattva, you know, in its full expression, is an enlightened being who is delaying their sort of final crossing over to nirvana so that they can stay in samsara and help everybody else become free. That's what a Bodhisattva is. A citizen of samsara by choice. And part of their, you know, power is that they can actually see more clearly what's going on. So a Bodhisattva doesn't get caught up in blame. It's a waste of time. The causes and conditions coming together to produce any moment of suffering are so deep and so vast. The reality of no singular, solitary, fixed, permanent, abiding self is so true that to get caught up in blaming people is a waste of precious time and energy. It doesn't mean that there's not, you know, responsibility and accountability. Yes, but you know that klesha quality of blame. It's not adding anything helpful. We have a mess. We're all part of it. We all helped to make it happen. And now we need to respond. Blame is like very reactive. And I think it's a good moment to pause and take in the teaching between what is it to react and what is it to respond. Responding, like that sense of reactivity, right, that conjures up the kind of, like, our triggered response. It just comes. There's not necessarily any mindfulness or intention. It's just like, you know, you bumped into me and now I'm pissed. Whereas responding is drawing on our wisdom mind. It's drawing on our heart of compassion. The self that we need to defend and protect. More and more we see, like, I can just act for the benefit of beings. You know, practice works. Practice works, and sometimes we can see this in how we aren't so reactive. And on a lighter note, I just wanted to share a moment of really observing how my partner Gokhan has really come a nice distance in his reactivity. So here's a little anecdote. When we go on vacation, one of the things that we like to do, so we you know, this in the winter, we go off and we spend some time in my family's cabin, and we like to get our favorite snacks and foods that we don't always get to eat here at the monastery. And Gokhan, for years, has been getting a jar of that cheese sauce that you put on nachos. Sorry to out you. And a bag of nacho chips. And this year he was like, I'm going to make my own queso. And so ahead of time, like a week ahead of time, he found a recipe online for this cheese sauce. Apparently there's different varieties, and he found one that doesn't use Velveeta. So it was like a real, like, wholesome queso. And we, like, went to the grocery store. We got other things. I mean, I got my stuff too. There are these fancy yogurts that I like, etc. But he got the ingredients for his queso. And then it's the first day of our vacation. And he did not waste time. It was not yet, I would say, 11 o'clock in the morning when Gokhan was over at the stove. And I was like, oh, are you making your queso? And he was like, yeah. And he made it up and tasted it. He was like, oh, yeah, that's good. And he brought me over a little taste, and on a chip, of course. And I tasted it. I was like, oh, yeah, that is good. So he has a nice pot of it to last the week. And he went to, you know, read and take a nap on the couch. And I was in the kitchen making myself a snack. And I had a little more of the queso. And then I thought, oh my God, I have the best idea for a prank. And so I took the big pot of queso and I made some sounds like, I was like, God, yeah, this is really good. Can I have some? And he was like, yeah, sure, help yourself. So good setup. And then I took the queso and it's like, you know, a good pot. And I wanted it to be unmistakable. So I took out like a big chunk of it. So there was just like a little bit left in the pot. And I made it, you know, I tucked it away so you couldn't see anything. And I went about my business and waited patiently. It was so hard to be patient. And eventually, sooner or later, Gokhan came out into the kitchen to like, you know, I don't know, have a snack. And so he goes to the pot on the stove and he's like, did you do something with this? And I was in theater in high school. So I'm like, it was really good. And he's like, you ate all of that queso? And I was like, it was delicious. And he said, that was it! I was waiting for the like, what the heck, nothing. He can raise an eyebrow. I can't do that. But I got the eyebrow raise. That was it. I complimented him then and there. I was like, no, I took it. I put it. Here it is. I brought out the Tupperware. I was like, how come you didn't react? He was just like, eh. There's hope, you see? I told you, there's hope. So back to the Bodhisattva. Back to the Bodhisattva. So, you know, when we step into Bodhisattva practice, we can hold up as our kind of fullest model of practice Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And to keep in mind that, you know, the story of their origin, because often Avalokiteshvara is depicted with 11 heads and 1,000 arms. And this came to be because Avalokiteshvara had taken a vow to save all beings. To save all beings. And so they worked and they toiled and they labored and they emptied all of the hells and the hungry ghost realm, and all of the beings from all of the realms were finally saved, and they took a breath and whoosh, instantly refilled, other beings rushing in, and they did it again and toiled and worked and labored and saved all the beings in all the realms and whoosh. And this happened maybe a few times, and finally Avalokiteshvara's head exploded. Wouldn't yours? And so it said the Amitabha Buddha helped by creating 11 heads and 1,000 arms. And Avalokiteshvara, of course, had to just accept, like, oh, it's endless. I took this vow, and I will never be done. And joyfully, I respond. That's the vow. So we're responding based on what? Well, we're responding based on that absolute light, based on that Buddha nature, based on that one body. That's our intention. It's not always spelled out. It's not always so clear. That's why we have the precepts. That's why we have taking refuge. That's why we have cease from harm, practice good, actualize good for others. That's why we have these teachings. That's why we have the lineage. That's why we have the Sangha. All of it is to help us see, like, okay, how do I respond? And this is, in its own way, creating a world. We're using that same capacity, but it's been liberated. In Dogen's fascicle, Old Buddha Mind, He writes, Genuan Zen Master Dzongshin was asked by a monk, what is the mind of old Buddha? Genuan said, the entire world falls apart. The monk again asked, what happens when the entire world falls apart? Genuan said, I would rather not have my body. This is a different kind of world falling apart. The created world falls apart, and it's not my body anymore. Oh, there's a body. There's one great, vast body of reality. The Dharmakaya. Can we act for the benefit of beings without falling into that old habit of putting ourselves at the center? If we look closely at samsara, returning to that teaching, we can see that it is nothing more than repeated acts of grasping. Zhenjer continues, when one contemplates, sees into the mind that grasps, it is originally pure. It's just the activity. It's just the grasping. It's like we're so close and yet we're so far away. I read a headline, in the last few days that said, it's Trump's world now, we just have to live in it. And then I went back to try and find who said that. And I Googled it, and there were like so many examples of that. It's like many people have said that. And then there were some that were from 2017. And I just want to say, it is not. It's nobody's world, okay? It's your world. It's my world. Do not be fooled. We get to respond. It's samsara. Samsara doesn't work. We can't be sustained by a sense of what we will accomplish when everything is how we want it to be. We have to just respond from that absolute light, releasing the need for expectations to be fulfilled just because it's true. Just because it's true. So, such a good time to engage in sacred activity. What is sacred activity? It's a matter of how you use your mind. Take a walk in the snow. Call a friend. Light your altar. Sit down. Call your senator. Let your voice be heard. Apparently, ordinarily, the Senate phone system receives about 40 calls a minute. But last week, they were receiving 1,600 calls a minute. Shugen Roshi, with the residents on Friday, a week ago Friday, encouraged us to call our representatives, right? Our representatives. We have some contact information on the bulletin board downstairs for folks who are local. I'm like, oh, I'm so motivated to call. I'm so motivated to call. That's so excellent that it's like the system's overwhelmed. People letting their voices be heard, responding. The vow is to help sentient beings. That's the vow. There's no playbook. There's no one way it can happen. We have to find our way with it. That's the creativity of our life. We have to trust that it matters. That's the faith and the trust. I'm going to let Naomi Shihab Nye have the last word. This is a poem of hers called Gate A4. Simple. It can be simple. Wandering around the Albuquerque airport terminal, after learning my flight had been delayed 4 hours, I heard an announcement. If anyone in the vicinity of Gate A4 understands any Arabic, please come to the gate immediately. Well, one pauses these days. Gate A4 was my own gate. I went there. An older woman in full traditional Palestinian embroidered dress, just like my grandma wore, was crumpled to the floor, wailing. Help, said the flight attendant. Talk to her. What's her problem? We told her the flight was going to be late, and she did this. I stooped to put my arm around the woman and spoke haltingly. The minute she heard any words she knew, however poorly used, she stopped crying. She thought the flight had been canceled entirely. She needed to be in El Paso for major medical treatment the next day. I said, no, we're fine. You'll get there just later. Who is picking you up? Let's call him. We called her son. I spoke with him in English. I told him I would stay with his mother till we got on the plane and ride next to her. She talked to him. Then we called her other sons just for the fun of it. Then we called my dad, and he and she spoke for a while in Arabic and found out, of course, that they had 10 shared friends. Then I thought, just for the heck of it, why not call some Palestinian poets I know and let them chat with her? This all took up 2 hours. She was laughing a lot by then, telling of her life, patting my knee, answering questions. She had pulled a sack of homemade mamoul cookies, little powdered sugar crumbly mounds stuffed with dates and nuts, from her bag and was offering them to all the women at the gate. To my amazement, not a single woman declined one. It was like a sacrament. The traveler from Argentina, the mom from California, the lovely woman from Laredo, we were all covered with the same powdered sugar and smiling. There is no better cookie. And then the airline broke out free apple juice from 2 huge coolers, and 2 little girls from our flight ran around serving it, and they were covered with powdered sugar too. And I noticed my new best friend, by now we were holding hands, had a potted plant poking out of her bag, some medicinal thing with green furry leaves, such an old country tradition, always carry a plant, always stay rooted somewhere. And I looked around that gate. And I looked around that gate of late and weary ones, and I thought, this is the world I want to live in. The shared world. Not a single person in that gate, once the crying of confusion had stopped, seemed apprehensive about any other person. They took the cookies. I wanted to hug all those other women, too. This can still happen. Anywhere. Not everything is lost. We are going to chant the Bodhisattva vows.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.